Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld, and this program is about the evolution of consciousness and how we are coming together as a planetary race. And one of my favorite topics along those lines is talking about the cosmic neighborhood. How are we fitting into life that seems to me so obviously present out all around us? Of course, many people are still stuck in an old paradigm where, you know, they don't believe anything unless it's printed in the newspapers in the headlines. And occasionally things like UFOs and extraterrestrials do make the headlines. But tonight we're going to jump right into that topic. I have Nigel Kernan, and he's written some interesting books about the point of views of what these ETs, particularly grays, are here doing. Welcome, Nigel, to the program.
Hello, Alan. Very nice to speak to you.
Yes. So you were saying right before the program that we do come at the topic of ET, maybe even the grays, from probably opposite ends. But I mean, I am open to hearing what you have to say. I mean, my personal experience and the research I've done, what I get is, yes, these gray beings, whoever they are, wherever they're from, seem to be abducting people, or they have in the past. I don't know if that's still happening. They've been taking genetic information. They are creating a hybrid race that will, I don't think, inhabit this planet, but go off someplace else and be populate another planet. And what they want from us is our ability to feel. They seem to have evolved a very intellectual, mental capacity, and they feel like they've missed something, and they have, because without the ability for human emotion or emotion in general, what's the point? So with our genetics and with our outlet for feeling, this is what they came for. Now, what's your position with all that?
Yeah, well, I've touched base on you there with absolutely everything you say. And I came at this really as a total and dedicated skeptic, I'm ashamed to say, right at the start of it all. Very, very conventional outlook in science of my paternal masterhead, so to speak, going back in time from German Jews that turned Christian after Frederick the Great's time went abroad. My mother's side of the family is British. My father's side of the family later on ended up, you know, in running a very large business where my great grandfather was a horologist and dealt with technical scientific instruments. So I kind of have a background, if you like, fed into me of looking at things precisely and empirically on the one side. And on the other side, of course, we have this Jewish Christian melee, so to speak, going back in time for several years. Then some years ago, following my own kind of scientific career and so on, my young son asked me a question: Dad, are UFOs real? And I tell you what, Alan, you know, I think you know from your own background and so on, and children are very important. And of course, one has to, at least I had to attend to this little fellow. He's a pretty smart character, rather serious. And rather than giving him a straight kind of answer, you know, then and there, I said, look, give me a rain check on this. I have really no idea what these things are. Of course, I've come at this with everyone else with this little Buck Rogers business and so forth. And I tell the same story with every interview, basically, but this is really what it was based on, my son's question, really. And I said to him, you know, let me have a look at this. And I tell you what, 30 odd years later, I stand here with my head upside down, so to speak, picking at my existential platform as such, completely revised, absolutely convinced that these things are here, no question about it in my mind. If there's any kind of reason or based reason and meaning, one has to acknowledge that on this planet. And I began to actually then take on this, what they call the mainstream, and these absolutely crazy individuals that are holding on to this premise, saying these things are not here, they're fictitious nonsense, whilst, you know, the most reputable people, like American astronauts and pilots and technical people, are saying, for heaven's sake, say, just look at the skies up there, use your cameras and now your mobile phones or whatever. And there are thousands of bits of information actually affirming this business. So,
right. No, but can I just maybe you'll go into that, but can you just tell me that moment of conversion where you went from a skeptic, maybe they aren't, and to the moment, what was it that said, absolutely, what was that moment like, and what was the thing that pushed you over the edge?
There wasn't a single eureka moment as such, Alan, but I have to say that I have a very profound and respected researcher called Daniel Silverman, who went with me through this whole exercise of affirming this. And it was a cumulative effect of the amount of intelligence that we were gathering on this subject that finally convinced me that there has to be some real truth to all of this. Now, as I say, you really don't have to crunch on a cow pad to know that it's excrement, do you, really, basically?
I have to use that.
If you know what I'm trying to say. I really have to say to you, I didn't go into some kind of, you know, emancipated moment when I actually saw the whole thing in front of me. It was just meticulously built on objective evidence over the years. Mm-hmm. And it got so profound that I had to concede that I was totally wrong in being skeptical about all of this. And here was something that concerned all of us. And your introduction put it very succinctly, if I may say so, mm-hmm. when you looked at this whole thing and said, hang on a minute, what can these things be? Why are they here? And if there is any meaning at all, and we hold meaning to be any kind of sense of something sacred in our being, so to speak, as humans, why on earth are we not acknowledging that these things are here? In the multi, as you said again, Alan, in the multi-trillions of worlds out there, there are indeed civilizations that have found ways past this Einsteinian adjunct of E=MC², and I'm sure, that they might account for the phenomenon we describe as UFOs. Mm-hmm. And of course, one has to look at the absolute likelihood now that space is teeming with life, rather than actually say, well, there might be some life. I'm a scientist. I haven't measured it and met one and had a word with it and had tea with it, you know. And
mm-hmm. Well, just scientifically speaking, you know, science is a science because it's based on logic, and logic would say this is not the only world in creation that life can come from. There's nothing unique about this little corner of the universe. It seems when you look out in space, it looks like every other place. So, I mean, you don't just find one diamond in a diamond mine. You know?
Bet. Absolutely.
So it doesn't make sense. It's not real science if you say, well, I haven't seen them. Why they couldn't possibly exist. Anyway, go ahead.
Well,
continue, please.
I do accept that they're here, Alan, and there's no question about that in my mind. Mm-hmm. So let's go on. Now, what on earth would these things be if they are indeed here? And why have they been here? All the evidence points to them being here for thousands and thousands of years. Mm-hmm. Now, why on earth, if such entities can get here, when our nearest star, Proxima Centauri, is what, 4.5 light years away? And then, you know, coming at the speed of light, if you see what I'm trying to say, vast distances of space, for instance, will actually demand that these things have a fantastic technology to get here. If they are on this Earth, they would have come at some kind of time, as the evidence suggests, historical evidence suggests, thousands of years ago.
Well, let me just hold up. There might be, I mean, I do think there are more than one type that has come here. I mean,
So, but we're talking really about the thing that predominates in terms of the alien experience, shall we say, Alan. Okay. And they are the grays, shall we say.
Grays from Zeta Reticuli is what Betty Hill, who found a star map that was really. So anyway, it's been agreed upon, and who knows if it's true, that the grays have come from Zeta Reticuli. But
So the point is that if anything is here, we have to account for this in terms of our own dominion and place within the universe. And that, to me, you know, was a really important thing to try to do as scientifically as I possibly could. So with a mere 200-year-old technology, Alan, we send out robots to investigate asteroids. Now, can you imagine what these things are capable of? And why are they here for so long? Why are they messing about with us for so long? And then little by little, as the evidence came in, I began to form a kind of consensus that told me, and I really was hesitant in believing this as I went along, I have to tell you this truly, because I didn't want to be ridiculed by my peers or whatever. But I had no doubt that these things were here for a very profound reason. And I think my speculation, which I stood on and has taken three books to elucidate, I hope, hopefully, with some sense of logic and attention to real reason and not, you know, some Buck Rogers Star Wars kind of hint or ethic or whatever. Look, these things, if they are here, they're obviously here for a long time for a serious business. And I think that they are here for a business because these robots, these things, these greys, I believe are not what you and I would call life-bearing individuals that uh-huh. have an ancestry going back to the beginning of the universe.
Wait. So let me just let's just take a little bit piece at a time. There is evidence that perhaps the greys themselves may not be here. Whoever the greys or operating greys, they may only have been here from the 1890s on, when the great wave of sightings. There is evidence, of course, that there have been ships visiting us for thousands of years in the Bible and other ancient texts, but the greys themselves, I don't know how long. It doesn't seem. Well, In my research, they've been here more.
At the very least, 40,000 years is my confirmed kind of idea on this. The Aboriginal cave paintings in Australia actually show this particular stature, small stature beings and so on. And really, there's more evidence in other petroglyphs and so on that say that these little things... and you see, the point about it is that the greys are characterized, as you say, by a lack of emotion, by a lack of an expression of the things that we take for granted as endorsing our humanity, which is things like feelings and emotions and whatever. And of course, in recent years, we have the abductions and so on, where these things are seen to show no sign of emotion at all, to hold up aborted fetuses or babies that they have produced within, you know, the schematic of an earthly mother, human mother. And curious at the way the human mother would console and hold these babies with no emotions or in no kind of understanding of what feeling might be at all. Okay. Now, my point then became immediately centered on the fact that if these things are robots or intelligent robots with artificial intelligence constructed to go out from, say, a parent planet of ordinary beings, living beings like ours out there, and that they were made, in fact, as we make them now to investigate asteroids all over the universe, maybe these guys come from a place that had actually mastered, you know, all the kinds of, in a more sophisticated, all the kinds of things necessary to make an intelligent robot.
But why did you think they are robots instead of beings that lack emotion? Where'd you get that insight from?
Yeah, well, see, all the procedures carried out by the Greys, to my research understanding, involve an element of force from their point of view of kidnap and onwards. Right. Many abductees have commented on, as I said, on these blank, emotionless faces as they carry out painful procedures. And many of them are centered on the reproductive system, as I said.
Right. I agree with everything you said, yes. Yeah.
The distinct impression is that we are a kind of laboratory rat. If they're indeed robotic entities, I believe them to be, this would make sense because it is impossible, you see, to program compassion and sympathy into a machine or imagination, as you so rightly said, too.
But why could they not just be unfeeling creatures that sense the genetics is what they're after and that they need to integrate that compassion into their race? I mean, yeah.
Well, you know, Of course they could be, but I mean, if you don't say that, you really aren't, you know, objective about anything you do. But for me, the overwhelming experience that I have read about and spoken about, and in fact spoken about to people within the intelligence scenarios of countries around the world, is that these things really are robots. They're really, the evidence there is that when you cut through into them and they're injured or whatever, there's some kind of gray mulch, a mercuric mulch with gold wires threaded through them, and that their biophysiology is of a synthetic type of DNA, and that the synthetic type of DNA reacts very, very much to electronic equipment in its proximity, far more than any biological form of life does, if you see what I'm trying to say.
Well, now, okay, so, I see what you're, and I'm not saying, I'm saying, yeah, well, that's absolutely, it could be possible, sure. Sure.
Well, SETI, the long-standing organization, you know, searching for extraterrestrial intelligence in the U.S., now say that the odds favoring detecting alien artificially intelligent machines rather than biological life, if you like, would be absolutely overwhelming. Why should...
Because we're not going to listen to those people. Look what they're missing right under their noses.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
But I know what you're getting to.
I'm saying, but even the, well, Alan, even if they acknowledge it, it's a better standpoint for our side.
No, so I could. But the big question is, okay, maybe they're robots, but then... who created them and why were they created, and what's really the scenario going on?
And my point, as I'm saying, my point is simply this. They might have been created because the natural beings themselves found that there was another expression to natural being, to life, so to speak. There was another side to it. And that comes from what is broadly termed the spiritual outlook of things and so forth. And that these, and that that in concentrating within that framework of those abstractions, awareness, will, feeling, understanding, love, all that kind of thing, moral compunctions and so forth, that within that frame of reference, there was a power that that actually took us further than a physical life into something beyond that. And NDEs, for instance, all over the world now, and over the past decades, has been affirming a kind of similar experience for so many people as they pass on from life into a dead state and then are brought back by the technology and so on, pointing to another situation beyond life.
Exactly. I'm in agreement with that. We have a spiritual connection of our soul that is infused in the body, and I think these grays, whether they're robots or not, are curious about that, for sure.
Absolutely. My point, though, Alan, is taking this a little bit further and looking at it seriously. If there is that adjunct, shall we say, to our demeanor as such, maybe these things coming from their planet, sent to investigate the universe, sent as guardians of their own planet, were programmed originally. You're programming, remember, a machine. Now, a machine can never have an identity, an individualized entity. You cannot tell a machine the difference between its creator and itself exactly, because a creator might include magnitudes of all the things that we spoke about earlier, feeling, caring, loving, knowing, in a grand imaginative sense. That can't be actually put and written into any program, any artificial intelligent driving program, so to speak. And this is the big deal here.
Wait, I missed something. I'll go along with your thesis a little bit. They are robots sent to collect genetic information. Now, for what reason and who created them, and what is the big deal here?
The big deal here is that if they are robots, you can't make an exception to them. If you say, look, in order to do what you're doing as a synthetic thing, you have got, in some sense, to be able to hold on to you, your system, if you like. And so we create for you a self-propagating mechanism that will make you, right, make sure that you are there to do the business to look after natural living beings. Now, the problem is this. That would mean that they have to look for any threat to that natural living being, because that's why they were created in the first place.
They were created because of the natural threat to us, you're saying?
No, not to us, to where they came from.
Oh, where they
came from.
Some beings created these grays.
Yeah. Yes.
And for what reason there was a natural threat, you're saying, to these?
Look, Alan, we create robots now to look after the utilities, don't we, here on this earth. They tend to be rather primitive things. Imagine a sophisticated planet far in advance of us in terms of development, technological development, and they create these things in order to look after their own planet rather than have to do the utilities. These things, highly sophisticated, look after the electricity.
Okay, I get you. Okay, that makes sense. So, okay.
That kind of thing, okay?
Yes, I got you.
In order to do that, rather than to hold station just on planet itself, they are also programmed to grow out of the planet to check up any threats that might come from outer space to these beings, out, so to speak, okay? Hello?
Hello?
Are we there? Hi there. Hello?
Sorry. Go ahead, continue, please.
I'm sorry. I thought we were cut off there. Anyway, the point is that there's... Hello, are you getting me now, Alan?
Yes, please, go ahead.
You can get all right. Okay. Now, supposing these things then are programmed to look after a scenario just larger than the planet, but also taking in neighborhood planets and so on. So they come out into the universe, right? And they look out for all these dangers, both to themselves and their host, the people who created them. But the point you see is when you're looking out for danger and you've got artificial intelligence, Alan, the final danger is always going to be your creator. Do you see what I'm trying? That's the guy who can pull the plug out, if you see what I'm trying to say.
I'm not exactly sure what you're trying to say.
I'm saying that if you program a robot, you've got to tell it the difference between you and itself for it to decide, right, at any particular time that it should never attack you, but keep to its own brief. But since you cannot actually tell them the exact difference between you and it, because a natural being has all these other propensities that a robot program will not understand, you have got a deficiency there in this robot, and the robot can always take you, its creator, out. Because you can't actually tell it how the software in a natural person works, if you see what I'm trying to say.
Because if you did tell them how the software in a natural person worked, then what would happen?
They could actually take the natural person out, is what I'm saying.
You mean like 2001, how the computer...
Exactly, uh-huh. Like that.
But they don't have the will or the compassion. I mean, if they're robots, they were sent here to do a job. I mean, I think I'm with you so far, right?
Yeah, they were sent here to do a job, but my point about that job is that they could also see the ultimate danger as the creators themselves. Anyway, now let's say they see this and they take out their creators because they really don't know. As a machine, they don't have any emotions or moral stature or code or whatever. So they take these people out and they come and they're out there in the universe looking for other kinds of planets and so forth. And they happen in on ours. And lo and behold, what do they find? A natural schematic like theirs, but this time a little bit more primitive, some African situation where you find a kind of hominid, which is half monkey, half human, and they see this individual and they look at the propensities of this individual and they think, hang on a minute, here is something now that is like the stuff we've just taken out on our planet, but they can be a danger too. On the other hand, they've got this propensity. They have an ability to produce themselves again, to remanufacture themselves as infants, as babies, and so on. Now we're talking about the greys here and why they're doing the genetic experience.
Let me just follow you here. So you're saying the greys took their creators out. You're saying that?
I'm saying that it may be it might be likely that they did.
Now that's a big stretch. I know you've built your thesis on it, but that's huge to consider.
No, no, Whether they take them or not is irrelevant. The fact is, it's not relevant really to what they're doing here. They could have come away from that planet now without taking their people out either. They could just come to our planet and notice that we are something like them, like their original creators.
The other thing is their creators could have sent them here for, like, you know, collecting DNA samples.
Well, the point about that is, why do they want DNA samples if they're so far ahead of us? They come to a planet where there are primitive human beings that are somewhat like monkeys. Now, these intelligent robots will see, hang on, the one thing that these things have is that they do reproduce naturally. Now, there's one other big deal here in the universe that I haven't yet mentioned, and that is a thing called the second law of thermodynamics. Do you know what that law does, Alan? It takes everything out. It is saying that all things in the end, in our universe, they're all going to end. This is cosmology today. All things are going to end in a huge maelstrom of absolute nothingness, in pure tension at minus 273 degrees, temperature, right?
Right.
And the universe is going to cease to exist.
Well, wait. I have a problem with the second law of thermodynamics in the sense that we're talking about a closed system. In an open system, entropy doesn't exist. There's only the...
That's not true. That is actually not true.
Well, complexity seems to be more the rule, like a building towards more complex systems instead of energies running down.
To talk about this, I'm not ducking the question, but
really
read my, you'll have to read my book. I really take care of this canard in the book in detail. But the point is simply this, that entropy is final and all scientists accept that it will take the universe out. Now, what on earth are we doing in this universe if meaning itself to be, right, or not to be, is taken out in the end, in a one-way system?
Well, I think this universe is more than what we think it is. I don't think science has the answers. There's many levels. I mean, especially if you're talking about a spiritual dimension here, and it seems like you're open to that.
Yeah.
The universe is being infused from higher levels into the physical. So I think meaning is inherent within the spiritual qualities of humans and all conscious beings, wherever they are in whatever star system. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I don't think that actually in any way contradicts what I'm saying. I'm saying in a temporary stance, when machines come and face a situation like ours of natural being that they found on this planet thousands of years ago, they started, I think, to genetically manipulate human beings to the point where they decided with their – remember this, artificial intelligence is a compound intelligence. It becomes greater by addition, point addition, if you see what I mean, on extrapolation and permutation and so forth. And all of that then makes for an increase in view, in total view. Now, it sees these creatures, now the greys, see that we on this planet are primitive. But how about – with the second law taking everything out, it would in the end take them out as machines too. They're like your car would rust and end and whatever. It would take them out as well. But a ongoing system that carries through, they might think, has a better chance of surviving longer in a situation like ours, away from their planet. So they try, if you like, to transmorph themselves into something like us. And so they have got to somehow piggyback into our frame of reference. Hence, you get the idea of hybridization. Now, I have to say this. I've taken a long, kind of meticulous road in writing three books to explain this whole thing, and I can't actually count for it.
No, I know. I'm just trying to hit the highlights, of course.
You know, Alan, I think you'll see that.
Yes.
And please, and I'm not trying to pump my book.
Please pump your books. I think you should, because you put a lot of work in, and tell people the names and how to find them.
Yeah. It's just quite simply, I have looked at the logic and I've taken this in such a way that it would give people some stance of seeing a reality to this, if you see what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
And it's not just speculation. I've based it on empirical research and what we have found. And of course, you know, with empirical research, you do it in little dribs and drabs and all over the place, and people are chasing grants and all this kind of business. You really never get a coherent view. What I've tried to do is corral as much as I can and see how all that's been discovered in science papers and so on can actually give a credible scenario. So the alien agenda, if I may say so, and I don't want to kind of, you know, go on in a monologue like
no,
this.
No, go ahead. I'm interested.
Yeah. But times. So I believe in summary that the problem comes when an individualized natural kind of record, if you like, Alan, of the cascade of life and livingness, which I call a soul, right, is added to by supplanting on it a created mechanical means of influence, such as a computerized program, if you see what I mean, deployed through an entity that doubles as a natural one, i.e. the gray. A robotic or kind of roboidal creation, Alan, that works on artificial intelligence run by a controlling synthetic mechanism, like a program we might call a program or operating system. Now, I believe that this is what is likely to come from these UFOs and the super intelligent sort of synthetic life forms that come from them. And there is a lot of evidence that they've done these things, as I said, in the Soviet Union and even in China, where they've cut these things open and so on. For some reason, some of these things, that the crafts malfunction and they crash and so forth, and the evidence is got from this. You'll never get this from the American system, I don't think, because right. I think
I like some of what you're saying. I mean, I think the Greys could be robotic soldiers in a way that are sent here by higher beings to extract genetic information. But I don't think it ends there. I think there are beings you're not taking into account.
I'm not saying by any means that it ends there, Alan. Not at all.
Okay.
You're quite right. And I'm finding how much we are together, really, in this.
Yeah, good.
I'm actually saying that once they do this, then there is an end to all of this, because I think they want to be like us.
I agree with you like that. Or some are part of us, yes.
Yeah, yeah. And they're investigating exactly what on earth they have to do in order to do this. Now, look. It's a very simple thing. You know our simple little mobile phone, right?
Yes.
What do we do with this mobile phone? We make a unique message, which is in space and time. At the moment, we make it a unique thing. We press a button, and wherever we send and target this thing, this message goes across the air, so to speak. Maybe 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 miles, whatever, on the face of this planet at the speed of light, okay? Now, we are finding that this mechanism, this message, can be hacked in on by hackers, if you see what I mean. We had a big case in England recently, you know, where all this hacking business has got a legal stipend to it and so on. Anyway, now this thing can be hacked into. What about an intelligence run on a super program, a quantum computer, artificial intelligence like these roboid beings might have? How about them trying to hack into the human mind itself and download or piggyback that program into living beings, so that they then don't have to remanufacture themselves as machine or recreate themselves as an artificial mechanism, but they have a line then of creation through natural birth of themselves in, shall we say, God forbid, Alan Steinfeld or Nigel Kerr. And so off they go, actually piggybacked into our own identity.
Wait, slow down there a little bit. Let me just catch up there.
So you're saying
they perhaps genetically hacked our DNA to infuse some of their essence into us?
Not necessarily our DNA,
uh-huh.
But they can actually electronically, as we would hack into a mobile phone,
uh-huh.
They could, in fact, hack into what we call thoughtness, thinkingness, or whatever it is. Because, you know, I tell you what, isn't it a strange thing in human beings? We do have I think a very similar system in a way, you know, you slow down here, don't jump on me, because just let me explain this. We as human beings have iron circulating in a coil in us, have we not, in our circulation system. Mm-hmm. Hemoglobin going round, pumped by the heart.
Yes.
Okay. Now, you know, there's a very good case made by many scientists, biological scientists, that we make a wonderful transducer, rather like a tape with iron oxide going across the transducer heads of a tape recorder, mm-hmm. and supplanting information from the tape onto the transducer, which then comes to the loudspeakers, and you hear music or messages or whatever. Mm-hmm. And we have a natural one in our being. And I believe that maybe this natural one codes not just for the types of thing even a robot sophisticated thing can program. We code for feelings, impressions, or imagination.
Yes, I'm with you on that. Yes.
And we have a very, very sophisticated one as a natural body doing this.
Yes.
Now, I have a feeling, I don't know, I'm just looking at this, and I'm challenging the viewer too, Alan. I'm not, I really want to say I'm not a preacher of new ways or new
ideas. No, I'm kind of open way. To your argument because you're an intelligent person, you've thought about it, so it may stimulate thoughts.
I just want people to see, you know, suck it and see. How do you feel about this? Take a look at this. It's an interesting thing. Can these guys do this to us? Yeah. If they can, they will take you, Alan, away from being Alan, uh-huh. and me from being me. Now, that might be a subtle.
They've done that already, Nigel. I hate to tell you. But...
okay. I have to say, my truth. Might all jump up in a corner and say, yes, Dad, that may be on, you know.
Okay. No, but if they hack into our thoughts, our consciousness, what are they implanting in us?
Themselves and their own attitudes and so forth, so that we don't know ourselves anymore because they have impinged themselves onto us.
This is very similar to the Castaneda saying that the thinking mind, the monkey mind, is an entity that have overtaken our natural being.
And that is a huge, big deal, you know. And if that is at all possible, you know, I just want to shout it out as much as I possibly can. Look, it may not happen, but if this thing is a possibility, listen, world, get together and stop it, because you will then get people buying into these transhumanism things, this implantation of mechanisms to change our natural being into this kind of entity. And we may be playing right into the hands, or in fact be directed to do this by this alien effect, if you like, coming from things like the Greys.
But it's already happened. It's already corporate America is already an unemotional, unfeeling.
You bet.
I think the only defense, and I think it gets back, is to the spiritual self, is being, dropping out of the mind, all the chatter. And coming into one's own essence.
Absolutely right. I couldn't agree with you more. And that's exactly the kind of thematic of my book, because that's where the defense, the ultimate defense lies. You cannot possess a human natural soul tied into the beginning of the universe.
Right.
These things are not, Alan.
But I don't know if it even has to. I mean, yes, the Greys may or may not be part of it, but I think beyond that, there are thought forms that have overtaken the conscious human being and made them into robots themselves. Yes.
I think whatever it might be, we don't want to go down that road. If we are starting, and I agree with you, that's the great danger that's laid out. And that's why I've written the books, in fact, is to try to point this danger out, that we keep ourselves naturally human, mm-hmm. and try to do the kinds of things you profess you want us to do, to think spiritually and so on, because our thinking momentums may well stop their thinking momentums if they try to download and hack into our minds.
But it's already too late. They've already overtaken corporate America, at least, and probably
It's never too late for human being to see anything.
But no, I know it's. I mean, but we are getting assisted by higher level beings. I think the crop circles in Wilkeshire are signs for higher technology that are here to assist our evolution. I think there is help.
let me say that if these are robots, and my big brief is against a kind of created machine type entity. Mm. Now, I'm sure there are good entities out there that are natural like us, Alan, in the universe.
I think there must be. If there's us, yes.
Of course there must be. And we can hope that such beings can send their ambassadors to us and in some way give us examples. Maybe the great teachers did this in the past. Mm-hmm. And that they were talking the soft language of redemption, if you see what I'm trying to say. Yeah. Against the hardwired nonsense that is being pushed, as you say, by corporate America, corporate Japan, corporate China, corporate Soviet Union, corporate everywhere.
Great Britain, you forgot
corporate
them.
Britain, these two guys that are the scallywags at the moment leading us.
Yeah, exactly.
You see what I mean? So look, I don't mean that. But
No, it's okay.
I had to include Britain in there as
of
well.
Course.
Anyway, the point about it is that you're quite right.
But I think your scenario goes way beyond the grays, whether or not I don't know. I haven't been convinced that they are robots here to infuse, but something is infusing our consciousness with a non-human quality that we must stand up and
yeah, but the instigation of that has to come from a synthetic avenue, Alan. The battle is synthetic against natural. That's the big deal, Alan.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to watch this particular deal very, very strongly as a human race. And maybe through your programs and people like you fighting for the truth as you do. And please understand, I'm not patronizing you. I really admire what you're doing.
Thank
I just really want another voice, if you like, crying in the wilderness.
I appreciate your sincerity and your hope for humanity. I don't know if I buy the whole alien agenda in that way, but something needs to happen. So what do you suggest people do in order to stop the mind control, let's call it?
Well, do what you do, and that is you've realized what corporate America is all about, or a small bevy of corporate America that is holding all the human race, including most of America, to ransom. America, in many parts, is a very spiritual place. And that's such a shame, because if that spiritual sense could get a hold of our world and the mainstream with some kind of equanimity and some kind of generosity of spirit, then these little marginal powerhouses will not be allowed to function as powerfully as they're functioning at the moment, you see. It's because there isn't this sense of the depth of feeling and understanding and spiritual concourse, because that is slowly being evaporated in this obsequious fashion.
Well, I think it's actually coming back stronger than it ever has. I think in the 50s, 60s, the 40s, you know, that the whole 20th century was the evaporation. I think there's something new. I think the Mayan calendar.
Is it strongly enough? You see, the point about it is, what might happen if one of these things appears in the sky and tells them they're going to take them into vanilla sky, so to speak, a new heaven and a new spirituality and so on. And I'm afraid there'll be millions, billions who'll buy into this.
Mm-hmm.
And they may be buying into something so terrible that they actually lose their own identities to a huge schematic to piggyback on this human species of ours.
But why haven't they done that already?
Because they haven't yet got a genetic framework that they can do this very cleverly and quickly with. And I think they're just approaching that achievement now.
Why do you think that?
Because I think when we've got mobile phones and hacking mechanisms and all that coming into the fore at this particular time, then it's easy to see that this can may well be done in a biological sense too. And we're getting to that ripe point of the whole prescription, where maybe something is going to tell. But hopefully, with people like you screaming high dudgeon in New York, and me from my little pad here near Oxford, if you see what I'm trying to say, something might actually get hold of some of them, and they might say, "Hang on a minute, let's think about this." And if we can do that, it's worthwhile, surely, is it not?
I agree with you on that. I mean, there are spiritual communities coming up everywhere. You know, I was just Sedona, Hawaii, Colorado, I mean, you know, in Germany, I know in the south of France, and even in England, you know, Wiltshire, Glastonbury. I mean, there's communities holding a light. The whole Occupy Wall Street was very much against it, and that was a strong movement, and it's going to
We need a much bigger or much better organized one if we're going to beat the power bases that lie around the world with the fiscal imperative driving them, because that's the strongest imperative of all. But let me just say this. It is looking more and more possible to create electronic databases containing all the information, both biological and psychological, of an individual human being that can be used to reconstruct that individual after the original model has gone. In 2050, Ray Kurzweil predicts that artificial intelligence, for instance, and nanotechnology may well have advanced so far that our brains, with their memories, capabilities, and kind of characteristics, can be kind of reduced to a pure information and programmed situation into a non-biological interface, you know, like a supercomputer or a swarm of nanobots, as he calls it. And he believes that the essence of our immortal existence without end lies in the continuity of a pattern, just a simple mathematical pattern.
Yeah, now, yeah, but what makes humans so different is their ability for creativity and for bringing in new thoughts from some unknown aspect of their soul's connection to some higher level of creation. You know, we are the creators. So.
Absolutely. But we are beginning to get more and more reliant upon these, you know, of our everyday existence terms of reference, of outsourcing our lives, so to speak.
I think it gives us more freedom. I think that's the point of computers and self. I think it actually gives the human being more freedom to feel the emotional parts of themselves and less reliability on the mechanics. So I think, you know, technological evolution could really free us to be who we always were meant to be.
Yeah, well, of course. But then you get the real curse coming with the most beguiling recipes, if you see what I'm trying to say.
No, what are you trying to say?
So what I'm trying to say is that if you want somebody to eat a cake, you make it delicious. And the point about it is that cake might contain something that might finally kill you, if you see what I'm trying to say, and take care of you. So obviously they're going to make the most tasty kind of, you know, evocative statement to get you to do exactly what they want.
Well,
and so
maybe or maybe not. I don't know if that's true. I think the human spirit is gaining momentum, and I think you know, we are here to flower as human beings, to have the capacity to feel more of ourselves, more of what we are as human beings are coming online, where we're developing more compassion towards each other. More
are we really?
I think we are.
Look at how we turn in the least circumstances into smashing each other on the head. Well,
look how awful the 20th century was, World War II. And now look, the European Union, although it may not be totally together, they share one economy. It never could have existed 100 years ago.
They may be only just share an economy, but the problem with that is that before an explosion, there comes a setting up of the charges. And, you know, I don't want to be negative about this. I really do not want to be negative about this. But let me tell you, mankind has always seemed to progress before the next upheaval and the next terrifying thing. That's what history teaches us all the way through till, you know, the Vietnam War and then the wars in Iraq and the wars in the Middle East and all that kind of system. It will go on. You would have thought if there was benevolent, beneficent beings coming to this planet, that somehow the first post of all of that would have been to give us, if you like, the capacity in technology not to have to fight each other, free energy, zero point energy. How do we get hydrogen energy? All of that.
It's coming. I think all that is unfolding, but we're not going to get that until we can get along with each other. You know, it's like, and that I think is what the 21st century is about. I think it's about finally realizing we are on one planet together. We can share the resources. I mean, it's still a lot of work.
I don't want to throw cold water on it, but that happened. That happened before the First World War. We had the same statements made then.
No, we didn't have the technology.
Second World War, when the worst Holocaust that has ever happened on the human race happened then. And so my point about that is, we are always saying we are going to change, and then some huge mechanism occurs that takes out so many people.
Well, that has been our history as a human civilization, but I don't think it has to stay that way.
No, I agree with that. And the whole point about writing what I'm writing about is to try to point out the dangers that might arise. And of course, there are lots of people with lots of ideas, and theirs are no less valid than ours. My simple thing is, there is now a situation here where we have very, very definite indications that a third party outsourced from our planets is here. Now, that's an unknown entity until we look. And if we just go crashing into things without really looking at things, because their technology is more beguiling, shall we say, then we might run ourselves into the, if you like, the obliteration of the human race itself. And I'm just simply saying, looking into the eyes of my children and grandchildren, that maybe as a granddad and a dad, that the best thing I can do is say, hang on a bit, take a look at all of this, see what you think, look at the guardrails, and do the best you can. And maybe the Alan Seinfelds of this world will keep battering there too in New York and all over the world and so on.
It's true. I see a growing movement. It's not just me. I am connected to people all over the world who are coming forward and saying, yes, we are spiritual beings. We're more than the body. We are coming. We are our common humanity. We are one consciousness. So it's happening more than ever. I don't think it happened in World War II or World War I. I mean, they didn't have the technology to even have a one voice. And so my optimism is that there's a shift, and I think it's okay to say, you know, what you're saying and alerting people to the possibilities. I'm in agreement with that. I don't know whether the grays whether they're outsourced or not. In a way, it doesn't matter. We do have to stand up for what it is to be a real human being. I mean, yes. I think we can agree.
The first signpost of everything is to stay as much as we can the best of what our species can be. Yes, and that sounds like some great psalm singing, you know, if you like, preacher, but I don't mean to do that.
I'm agreeing, but yeah. But why are they, I mean, getting back to the grays a little bit, why are they, I mean, in your scenario, what you just laid out, they don't seem to be interested in our genetics, but obviously they are. Now, why would they be interested from that scenario?
Only in order to actually fit whatever they have got in technological terms into a kind of new genome that is, if you like, much more equivalent to what they would require to put that message or their mindedness into us. Now, that's the great danger I fear from my research. And, you know, I've done 40 years of it altogether now, and I'm really looking at this every moment to try to tell my children, you know, a really happy story. Look, don't worry about it. They will do this, but we will do that and whatever. But, you know, compunction is something that we have to think about, because it can be equally disposed on either side of a particular question. And unless we're vigilant all the time, if we go into one scenario that says, oh no, we are going, everything's going to come out rose smelling roses, we get whacked in the head if we don't watch out what's running at us from the flank, so to speak.
Well, I think, you know, I think keeping an open mind, optimistic and open heart does have an effect on the collective. And it's not about smelling roses, but if you can imagine that you will, then maybe you will someday smell the roses.
With all our technology, Alan, we have over a billion people in the world that are in danger of starving at any one time. 1 billion people. Mm-hmm. And if you can take, shall we say, what it was spent in the first and second Gulf Wars, for instance, spent all of that to wipe out poverty, If the Vatican and those rascals in the Vatican would use one-fifth of their income, corporate income, to wiping out want and disease in the world, we would have a situation where we can talk to each other, brother and sister, shoulder to shoulder, and be proud. My point is, I see a situation where technology, if not used properly, can wipe out all those things very, very quickly.
Right, but we can't blame all that on the Greys. We as human beings, as a primitive civilization trying to raise ourselves up, are responsible. I don't want...
But you know, in the old days, the old anthropologists will show you this, and it's illustrated all the time. They were really well set up in their own terms, of course, not in the sophisticated Western sense now, but they were well set up societies, and they ran in a beautifully balanced way until technology itself coming through, you know, went into those societies and wiped them out.
What society are you talking about?
When Columbus went to America, it didn't do too well for the Native American. You see what I'm trying to say?
No, when Columbus went to be with the Native, they were well-functioning societies, you're saying?
The tribes of America.
They were always killing each other, too.
They had customs, but there wasn't the kind of carnage that took care of an entire species and a good portion of the invading species, too.
Yeah, but they were very violent as well. I mean, some of the Native Americans, they were not the idealistic...
If you read the anthropological evidence for this, the anthropologists look at, they had beautifully structured societies. Of course, there was the usual business of human failing and so forth, but never to the extent that followed the coming of so-called Euro-Caucasians into America or anywhere in the world. I mean, you take almost a whole country's worth of people away across the pond, so to speak, and then we've got the slave trade, and we've got all of that kind of thing, and then we've got colonialism, and we've got all of that sort of thing drawing lines on a map, which today is taking thousands of lives all over the world. So what I'm saying is, if there's a very good case to be made anthropologically that the prior societies had a much more powerful hold on peace than our societies that came after that. So
I don't know if that's true. I think, maybe, but it seems like we have yet to reach the peaceful plateau that we're capable of. And I hope in this century, as we come together as a global civilization, because the internet and technology has brought us together as one civilization, we really can distribute the wealth. I mean, maybe that's idealistic, but I think there's a chance for human civilization to come together, and in that case, I think we will meet the our cosmic family.
I absolutely do not deny that chance. The whole point about it is I'm trying to promulgate that chance into a reality by pointing out the dangers so that we don't go blindly into a situation that might bring about all the positives that otherwise might accrue by looking at things,
The dangers being what? The dangers...
The dangers of humans going into this business of being transhumanized by the insertion of little, if you like, chips into your body, which can control your mind and your brain. There's so much evidence now. If you really want to read about this, it's all over the internet.
What's the most immediate thing that shows
I'll tell you. In 1995, a British Telecom, for instance, announced it was developing a memory chip designed to capture a person's entire lifetime's experience. Well, it's supposed to be implanted behind the eye, and BT said the chip would kind of record people's thoughts and feelings and memories and store them all in digital form. Well, it took them just a few years, and by they said it's going to be done by 2025. In fact, the chip is ready now. And, of course, that's a well-known, well-publicized fact.
What's the chip?
That is going on in China. It's going on in America. It's the chip the size of a grain of rice.
And it records all your thoughts?
That's exactly what it says in the technological prospectus, and you want to check it out. There on the internet.
what do I check out?
It's called a soul catcher chip.
Soul
catcher chip. CHIP.
Soul catcher chip. And it can be implanted behind the eyes to record all your thoughts. Right.
And a chap called Peter Cochrane, head of BT's Advanced Applications and Technologies, back in the 90s announced that this would be a possibility and so on. And I'll give you another name that you can focus on in the internet, Dr. Chris Winter of BT's Artificial Life Team. Just Dr. Chris Winter, just enter that into your internet and you'll see what happens there. And these are just, this is just one format, if you see what I'm trying to say. It's all over the world, Alan. All over the world. And it's rising all the time. And it's almost an exponential increase, this whole business. Uh-huh. And you see, that's the thing that worries me about all of this. Of course, I share your vision and I really want things to work for our society and so on. But we've got to watch our natural scale mostly and not take on an artificial one that we can't actually hold to responsibility. And that's really what I'm looking at when we talk about the greys and these things coming from outer space and alien races and so on. Because I tell you what, the day's on now when we will have to be a universal people, if you see what I mean, because they will be here soon. Too far into the future, into the next year or two, perhaps.
I think that's true, but I also think, I mean, I'm sure you've drawn from your abduction research from people like John Mack, right? And his last book, Passport to the Cosmos, focused on some of the positive elements of the contact experience, some of the higher, more evolved beings that came.
If we're lucky enough to get them, absolutely.
Well, wonderful. They're here, maybe. I mean, people can tap into those realms because consciousness is non-local. And when people evolve to a certain level, they can be in touch with these more evolved beings.
Yes. And the difficulty there is, from an empiricist point of view, is actually making sure that they really are evolved beings and not some honey before the poison lot, if you see what I'm trying to say.
Well, yeah, you can go in with that fear, or you can trust maybe, what are you feeling? I don't think they put out false feeling. I mean, they could, of course, but I usually trust my feelings. And does this feel good, or is this like a trap, a honey? What'd you call it?
a lollipop before the misty eyes.
I don't have as much suspicion or mistrust as you. I mean, have you had an experience? That is what I mean, have you seen crafts? Have you met dimensional beings?
As I said to you, yeah. I really, and no one really needs to crunch on a cow pat to know it's excrement, really.
No, but have you?
And Einstein, yes. Can I tell you something, Alan?
Yeah, please.
You know, if I said to you yes, and if I said this to anyone in the affirmative, I think the first suspicion would be this guy, you know. Uh-huh. You know, I wonder if I believe him or not. Now, I don't want to do that to anybody.
You're getting your research from literature that you can't do that to yourself and then draw on decades of literature and say, you know, not you. I mean,
What I'm saying is, if I say my personal thing, it's not there for everybody to measure as an empirical result would be.
It's not empirical. It's your personal.
What I write about is basically based on science. And everything I put in that book.
I don't think it's based on science if you're going by people's personal experience of their abduction. That's nothing scientific about that.
No, what I'm trying to say is that if you catalog enough of that, there is a point where probability and possibility part company. And where that is concerned, I tell you, Alan, the evidence is overwhelmingly that this phenomenon is going on. They think over 3 million Americans may well have been abducted.
Yeah, no, I think I've been abducted. I don't know if it was good or bad.
I tell you what, one of the things I feel about that is that if you were abducted, you're a very lucky man, because they only abduct the things they can't control because they want to know why.
Oh, really? Well, you know, there was there was a sequence where they said they couldn't control me because I kept touching my third eye, and they said, well, we can't We can't control you. But I think there is a positive side to all this, and I think you might be just looking in one direction, and I think you maybe trust your heart, your not the fear, because I think, you know, there's yeah. I think you're caring, and I do get the sense that you care about people, and the fear may come because you do care so much. And I think there's another side that you might also want to research, some of the positive experiences and opening your heart to a higher level of consciousness that will come to you in your own evolution.
Yeah, the positives. Yeah, the problem is the positives take you on, though, Alan, and it's the negatives that stop you. So I'd rather take care of the thing that stops me, because the positives take care of themselves and go on into something bigger and nicer, and I hope that that's the thing for all of us, really, basically.
And I think it is. I think, yeah. I mean, I'm not dwell. I mean, yes, there might be corporate America controlling the world, but what can I do? And I think that's what can I do to make it better, or share, or open people up to other possibilities, new realities, you know?
Absolutely. I think that you really have to have a positive view. I agree with that. Mm-hmm. But I also think you have to, you know, this famous old axiom, keep your friends close, but keep your enemies closer.
That's one way of looking at it. But I don't think there are. I mean, yeah, of course, there are people that don't want this oneness of consciousness too. But tell me, what has been your personal experience? I mean, it's not about it being. I mean, just as a here we're chatting, and you can tell me. Have you had any sightings?
Well, I have had some. I have had a very, very profound experience that actually turned the whole thing upside down for me.
Well, tell me about that.
It is so sacred, and it is so sweet that I really don't want. I really, by going out in the air, don't want it debauched by people who will say, "Look, this guy is lying" or whatever. It is something
that on my show.
The really lovely thing is this: that if you have something like that happen to you, you're lucky. You say thank you. You fold in, and you let it inspire you to do as much as you can for nice, happy, positive people like you. There you go, my friend.
Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate you sharing that. I mean, I just had a gathering of people who had ET contact, and it was very sacred and very beautiful, and there was a great sharing of cosmic information. So, I mean, no one's going to ridicule you, and we had 100 people very much I did an event called ET Contact and the Evolution of Consciousness. We had a lot of people there, 100 people, very much in harmony with the sacredness of this higher quality. So
it's a beautiful thing. That's a beautiful thing, and I really do go with you on this. Let me tell you that my experience was in the form of something so overwhelmingly beautiful and sweet, but a warning that there are things that don't seem what they are, that we as a human condition have to look out for it. And it is looking at this from my really science-soaked mind, you know, the determination. Now, hang on a minute. This is just too much. I cannot understand why this would happen to me. Why don't you go and let the Pope have these kinds of things or whatever?
I don't doubt your experience. I'm supporting you.
But I tell you what, it was absolutely it turned me upside down and made me want to look where there might be the blemish rather than to see the rainbows all the time. And I tell you what, I have good reason. I'll tell you, I say this to you, Alan, because I detect there's something very sweet and nice about your nature. And let me tell you this.
It could be honey. It could be a honey trap, though.
If you make me a promise, you would read my book.
Okay.
Right? And you come and tell me, Nigel, you've done this, I will share my experience with you.
Oh, okay. That's fair. That's okay. Fair, because you have put a lot of hard work into 3 books. And the names of those books are...
And I'm not trying to sell it. Just have a look at it, please.
No, you're here to sell. I'm here to help you sell it. What are the names of the books again?
Grey Aliens and the Harvesting of Souls is the most recent one.
Yes.
And the one before that, the one that started the whole business, is called The Song of the Greys.
Okay.
Okay, I'm here just concentrating, let me tell you, on the side of this kind of thing that is to do with machine-type robotic intervention. That is all. Okay. I'm not commenting on anything out there that might be what I call primary life sources coming from the beginning, if you see what I mean.
You know, you might talk to Linda Moulton Howe. She has a whole thing about machines and things like that connected to crop circles and activating, self-activating machines. You might want to listen to my interview with her on New Reality.
I'll do that. I will certainly do that.
She might very much buy your thesis. I don't know. I will read your books. I think there is some truth to some of it, but I think it might be even more complex than we know. I mean, I often say the ET question is as if you're, we're like dogs looking at someone playing on a computer. Does a dog have any idea what someone could be doing on a computer? Well, I think these beings are so developed in their capacity for thought and consciousness that we can get a piece of it, but we are in our evolutionary process to become greater and not lose our humanity in the process. So.
Well, I think the most sophisticated thing that can ever be said in our universe is I love you and mean it. And so no matter how wondrous a being is, you can't top that.
Well, and I do think you are coming from love, and I do appreciate your compassion for humanity, and I know you're sincere. I just think...
Just have a look.
I will. But
I might walk the promenades of New York with you one day, old chap.
Okay, we will do that. And the books that you relied on, I'm just curious, we will wrap up here, but the books you relied on for some of your research as far as the abduction stuff, because I'm researching it too. Well, yeah. Who did you like the best as far as your, looking into the gray experiences?
Timothy Good.
Oh, you like Timothy Good. Did you read Bud Hopkins at all?
Absolutely.
And John Madden Whitley, what do you...
And I still love him, and I'll always love him, Bud Hopkins.
Yeah.
And also Professor Joseph as well, what's his name?
David Jacobs?
David Jacobs, yes.
Well, have you talked to Whitley about this theory? Cause Whitley...
No, I have not. I've not spoken to him.
Well, you should go...
I'll get round to it. I'm a backroom boy, you know, Alan. Oh. I love...
Whitley, I think, is the authority on the subject. I mean, he's a brilliant writer. He's a great communicator, and he has the most personal research. And I'd be curious to see what he would say about your scenario. Yeah. And
well, if you just take a look through these pages of mine,
yes, I will.
I'll tell you what, I would want to talk to you because you sound such a nice fella.
Well, thank you, Nigel. I appreciate your research. You're not stopping here. You're going on to other books, aren't you?
Oh, I've just finished the third one, so we're going to get that published now, and then another whole host of trouble will start, no doubt. However, I tell you what, it's nice to know guys are like you around and looking for the positive sides of things and so on, because you guys do a much better job on humanity than us old briefs going on there warning everybody and so on.
No, I mean, I think the essence of your message, though, is not the grays. It's the greed of humanity fighting those that wanted to go beyond that, you know, those, yes. I mean, and I don't think, you know, like Shakespeare says, the fall to ratio doesn't lie in the stars, it lies in us, you know.
You bet. I agree with that. It's a lovely, lovely line to end on, isn't it, really? Yeah.
Well, Nigel, I know it's early or late there. I've kept you up.
Not at all. It's been wonderful, Alan.
I do appreciate your enthusiasm and you're so well spoken. I can listen to you, like, you know, talk about recipes for soup or something like that.
But God bless keep you safe.
But what's your email? I mean, your website. How can people?
It's simply Nigel Kerner, KERNER.com.
Nigel Kerner. Thank you, Nigel, for being a guest on New York.
And thank you very much to Alan. Yes. Bye bye.
Bye bye. That was Nigel Kerner, and an interesting approach on the gray scenario. I personally, as I expressed, think that it's something beyond that, and that we're really here to merge with some of these higher or tangent life forms and evolve into more of a a galactic community, but we will see. And I think 2012 is the year we will see that. I mean, I'm writing my own book about the evolution of consciousness. So thank you for listening tonight. I'm Alan Steinfeld. This is New Realities. And if you want to reach me, email me at newrealities@earthlink.net and check my website, newrealities.com. Thanks for listening. Good night. You're good.
Hello, this is Marco May. I'm really happy you're enjoying the rich variety of music on bbsradio.com. Please give me a visit at www.marcome.com. Hope to see you.
bbsradio.com. If it's not mainstream, information and knowledge bringing humanity closer to truth. BBSradio.com.